From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 27th day of January, 2021. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dale Durkles. Jackie Vakes is out of the office today. And a bit later in the program, Drew Lerner will be here from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City to discuss the weather forecast. Along the way, I'll remind you to sign up for the conservation cropping webinars that are taking place online. It's free, and give you details on where to go. You bet. You can go to willag.org, and if you scroll down, you'll find that photo today of cattle grazing and a link for the free registration tomorrow, 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. for the Conservation Cropping Webinar. It's the second in the three-part series. Get yourself registered today. More details in just a bit right here on Illinois Public Media's Closing Market Report.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn in Chicago today settled at $5.34 a bushel. That was a penny and three quarters of a cent higher on the day. The May contract at $5.35 1/4, one and a half higher in December, up or rather down 2 cents at $4.42 1/2. Soybeans, the nearby March at $13.74 3/4, up 4 1/2 cents. The May at $13.73 1/4, 3 3/4 higher in November. Beans at $11.49 1/4, 3/4 cent higher. The bean meal, a dime higher for the day. The bean oil up 61 cents. Soft red winter wheat down 7 at $6.58 1/4, and the hard red at $6.36 3/4, down 4 1/4. Both of those, of course, in the lead option months. And in the livestock side, nearby live cattle down 55 cents. Feeders were down $1.40, and lean hogs were up 12.5 cents. We're now joined by Dale Durkles. He's at Grain Cycles out of Bloomington Normal area. Thank you, Dale, for being with us today. I appreciate you filling in. I want to talk a little bit about the market and the volatility that we've seen over the last couple of weeks, actually over just the last 4 or 5 trading days. Can you give me your assessment of what's been taking place?
You know, I think prices got to such a level that people started to get spooked and a little bit concerned. And, you know, when you go into last week in particular, we were modestly volatile until we hit Friday. And then I think everybody got real anxious all of a sudden. And we started to leak down a little bit and hit the fun stops. And you know, that's always going to be a risk in this game here at this point. And, you know, I saw a thing here this morning, somebody looking at corn in particular was saying, you know, it looked like the funds net overall over the last week might have actually added a little bit to long position. So with the funds at near record levels long on corn and beans and lesser degree wheat, but you know, you're up in here. Anytime you hit a snag on the downside, you got to worry. You hit some stops and you're going to have a quick downdraft in the market. And then you're going to see things like what's happened the last couple of days here, where you recover pretty quickly too.
Why is it, you suppose, that the funds and others, outside influences, have been moving money into the agricultural markets?
I think it's this story that got some traction. We'll go back into last summer, although people were somewhat in denial. Timing stuff said that we are making important lows. If you're a follower of long-term cycles, you know, that's in spades. And I think then as we started to gather momentum to the upside in the fall itself, then we started to see some things happening in China with their crop and the thoughts that, you know, their imports of corn were going to be up, beans were going to remain strong. And I think all of a sudden, funds just started looking at commodities in general, going, you know, this is a potential place where we can make an awful lot of money. And you go back into even, I think, late October or somewhere in November for sure, we started to see some of these stories surface that commodities are on another super cycle run to higher levels. Now, whether that's true or not, we could debate, not important today, but that pulled money into the commodities and the agriculturals in particular.
What should producers be making of it all?
I think they need to be careful. You know, a lot of producers keep hearing these stories about China, you know, and they were reinforced this week. They bought about 2 million ton of corn over the last couple of days. Then there was a story out from the ag attaché in China. You know, yeah, he sees imports going to be 22 million ton. There was a story that, you know, in the next marketing year, 21, 22, bean imports could be 110 million ton, up another 100 million ton or so from this year, or 10 million ton or so from this year. Producers continue to get bombarded with this wave of news that, you know, this is bull, you know, and it keeps fueling them. And I think the biggest risk producers have is that it kind of traps them from looking at the market and going, you know, $5 corn and near $14 beans, I can make some money at this game. And so I think it's kind of inhibiting the interest in making sales. So I think producers really need to stay somewhat disciplined in this mix.
To what point should they go ahead and empty out the bin except for what they believe they'd like to gamble with through the summer months?
I think that's where I would be with old crop. It's down to a point called gambling stocks, because in any bull market, and we could say the same reverse for a bear, but any bull market here, you know, at some point you have to start asking yourself the question, what can make this any more bullish? I mean, we've already got so much hype built into this market at this point, so much expectation that things are good as far as the eye can see. And, you know, at some juncture, you know, that peaks out and it runs the risk of what we saw last week, where all of a sudden things can break real hard. And the issue they have to worry about now with the rebound we've had this week is that if we turn down again and we hit another round of fun stops, if things would weaken enough for whatever reason, you know, you could quickly say nearby corn futures could go to 4.5, or bean futures, you know, they could go back to $12 just in a heartbeat, just on a wash out of that fund money. And so it really takes some discipline. And I think, you know, you really with whole crop need to be down to roughly gambling inventories that this thing's going to get better at some point yet this winter or spring.
And on the cash sales side, how far along would you want to be with new crop?
New crop, you know, people have to look at their own specific needs, their own specific situation, you know, and some people are going to be a little heavier, some people are going to be a little lighter, but I think, you know, that new crop, when I'm sitting here and understanding if weather is decent this spring, and after 2 years of problems, you would think it would be, we're going to add 7-8 million more acres in out of prevent plant that we had last year, and we may add some acreage on top of that this year. And primarily, I think it's going to come into corn and beans, probably into beans, so, or most of it into beans. So I think people need to dial in. We got bigger acreages ahead, and, you know, then you're going, well, what if we have a crop problem? You have to ask yourself the question, what if we don't have a crop problem? You know, and so I think, you know, when I look at the new crop and considering we're close to 4.5 beast corn, we're 440 today. When I look at the November beans at virtually 1150, you know, I'm looking at this going, I probably need to be 20% or so priced anyway. You know, and I look back at 1994, which is kind of an analog period I've looked at for a variety of different reasons. But in any case, yes, we did break down through late winter and on into spring, and had a rebound in the summer before we fell apart. So I think there will be opportunities out there in front of us, but I wouldn't gamble, you know, everything on seeing those either.
Some have been talking about 2008 as an analog year. You're not in that camp?
I am not in that camp for an awful lot of reasons at this juncture. And, you know, one of the bigger reasons, that whole scenario back in 2008 was building for an awful long time. And there were a lot more things that were in the mix in play to give us this huge lift to the upside once again. And, you know, when I look at 2008 all the way up in through 2012, if you want to look at it broadly, to me, it's like the 1970s into 1980. And, you know, we didn't come back in with a big replay to the upside once again to get new highs. Doesn't say we can't have good levels, but at least not new highs. The other thing, when I look at the long-term cycle counts in commodity indices, as well as some individual commodities, I still see them telling me I've got big lows coming 2025, 2026, 2027. I'm on the way out there. And so I'm not so sure we can see this move to new all-time highs like the super cycle people want to talk up.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Good talking to you.
Dale Durkles is with Grain Cycles. You can find him on Twitter at grain_cycles. Here's a look at today's agricultural news. The Biden administration will approach economic and trade relations with China with, quote, strategic patience, unquote. The administration is starting to review current policies, including reviewing tariffs, but that does not mean Biden favors removing them. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki said early this week the president, quote, will take a multilateral approach to engaging with China, and that includes evaluating the tariffs currently in place, adding, quote, the president is committed to stopping China's economic abuses on many fronts, unquote. The Phase One trade agreement between the U.S. and China has increased China's purchases of U.S. farm commodities. However, the purchases are still not on target to reach levels pledged in the agreement. China is expected to continue the increased purchases in 2021. We'll stay with trade. A group of 72 EU and U.S. organizations have urged its leaders to remove or at least suspend all additional and retaliatory tariffs affecting or threatening transatlantic trade. In a letter addressed to President Joe Biden and to the EU Commission President, the group says suspending the tariffs is urgently needed to address economic harms. Specifically, the groups refer to tariffs on large civil aircraft and steel and aluminum disputes. Food and agricultural goods make up a disproportionate number of the EU's overall tariff line, according to a 2020 analysis by the American Farm Bureau Federation. The most impacted group includes alcohol, tobacco, and cotton. And finally, the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives applauded President Joe Biden's Buy America executive order signed this week. The action supports manufacturers, businesses, and workers to ensure that federal purchasing programs follow Buy American requirements. The order seeks to close loopholes in how domestic content is measured, create a new position at the Office of Management and Budget to oversee the issue, and to increase oversight of waivers to domestic preference laws. The Council has long supported enforcing and strengthening the Buy American provisions in the programs administered by the Department of Agriculture, such as the National School Lunch and School Breakfast programs. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Hey, have you signed up for the Conservation Cropping Seminar? I hope so, but if not, please do so right now. You can find out more details on our website at willag.org, willag.org. The next seminar is from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. tomorrow. I'll be emceeing that event. It's a Zoom event, so you don't have to go anywhere, and it's free to register for the Conservation Cropping Seminar. Tomorrow we'll be talking about livestock in particular and rotational grazing, other types of grazing as it relates to conservation. You want to make sure that if you're in that area, you sign up. Otherwise, if you're into soil health and other kinds of conservation methods or want to learn more about cover crops, you can just sign up right now. Registration is free and online at willag.org, willag.org. Look for Conservation Cropping today. That'll be posted there with a picture of cattle grazing. The Conservation Cropping Seminar is supported in part by Illinois Extension, the Illinois Department of Agriculture, NRCS, and the American Farmland Trust, among others. On this Wednesday, we're joined by Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City to talk about the forecast and weather across the growing regions of the planet. Good afternoon to you, Drew. Thanks for being with us. How are things there in Kansas City?
Oh, yeah. Now, this town is hopping around. You know, the big Chiefs win this last weekend, and we're off to the Super Bowl again, and So you can't turn the radio or TV on without hearing something about the football team. but we're doing good.
Well, yeah, it seems that's a little like Groundhog's Day, right? I mean, we did this last year too, didn't we?
Exactly.
If I remember correctly. I do want to talk about the Northern Hemisphere and stay in this part of the world to begin with. The wheat crop around the planet, what kind of condition is it in for winter wheat?
Well, you know, I think most of the world's wheat is doing okay under the circumstances. Let's put it that way. I have to put a disclaimer or two in there. Because places like Russia, you know, their southern crop did not get planted very well. Some of it didn't get planted at all, and a lot of it is not well established because of dryness. But when you step back and look at the last several weeks, there has been no damaging cold that occurred so far in that area without some snow on the ground. So they're okay for being in the shape that they're in, right? China has a very good wheat crop that's out there. It was very well established this year, and it has had one round of cold. There was a lack of snow on the northern fringes of the region where it was coldest, but I don't think it was cold enough to cause any kind of permanent damage. That occurred back in December. India's wheat is getting ready to reproduce. There's certainly been nothing threatening there, although it is dry, and India is a hard place to get it to rain during the winter, but with La Nina around, we should be able to see some rain next month. While the crop is reproducing. So things look good there. Now, back in the northern hemisphere, back here in North America, the situation this past week got a little tenuous in parts of southwestern Canada's prairies and the northwest U.S. plains. Montana, Alberta, southern Alberta, and southwestern Saskatchewan did see temperatures near and slightly below zero with no snow on the ground. In fact, it's still in that state right now. They're going to warm up for a little while, but they will get very cold in another week. By the end of next week, the temperatures will be well below zero, and so we've got to get some snow on the ground for them to protect that crop. Now, the cold that occurred this week might have injured a little bit of the crop, but it looks like the temperatures stopped right at the threshold, and I think there was sufficient hardening out there, so I really don't think there was any loss of significance up to this point in time.
You mentioned La Nina with India, but this weather event has been playing on the planet since late last summer, I think, through the fall and then early winter, of course. We've talked a lot about South America. We'll get to that in the moment. Do we have concerns, really, in the Northern Hemisphere as it relates to La Nina?
Well, there are some interesting concerns, yes. You know, La Nina events that occur after the solar minimum, which we reached last summer. Solar minimums, usually after they occur, we usually see a La Nina event. And quite often, we'll see a multiple-year La Nina event occur. Usually it's midway between the solar minimum and the solar maximum. Now, why does that matter? Well, it matters because La Nina is one of those events that removes moisture from the atmosphere in the mid-latitudes. So the longer La Nina prevails, the less moisture is in the mid-latitudes of the northern hemisphere. And this is one of the reasons why the longer lasting, more significant La Nina events in the past have generated drought in Russia. The relationship there is pretty strong. And in the olden days, we used to have trouble here in North America with La Nina prevailing and having droughts. Now, if you go back and you look at the most recent La Nina events, there's been a tendency for the impact on North America to be a little less significant with each passing event. And the reason supposedly is because of the increased atmospheric moisture that we have experienced by warming up our atmosphere and warming up the oceans. There's actually more moisture around on a year-by-year basis, with or without La Nina, to begin with. So if you bring a La Nina around, yes, it still reduces the moisture in the atmosphere, but we're in a more moisture-rich environment to begin with. So recent past La Ninas haven't had nearly the impact that they had back in the 1980s. Now, The NOAA model, publishes or actually updates a forecast model for El Nino and La Nina every week. Actually, they do it every day, but they publish it every week. And the model, starting a week ago last Monday, took a significant turn towards intensifying the La Nina event as we go through the late spring and summer. Instead of continuing to weaken it and through the summer and then bringing a little more strengthening in the autumn and winter of next year. This was a fundamental change in that model, and it's got a lot of people a little worked up right now, because if La Nina does intensify as we go into our summer season, that drying influence will start to have more precedence on our weather. And La Nina also tends to warm the atmosphere as well, so we would have warmer and drier bias added to our already somewhat dryish summer weather outlook. And that's got a lot of the marketplace a little bit excited. I will tell you this, though. You have to be careful with that NOAA model. It is not always that great. It was a year ago that that model put out a signal that we would be in La Nina by June or July of last year. And I was telling folks back then that the model was too excited. It was overdoing everything, and that we'd be lucky to see La Nina evolve before we got to the latter part of the third quarter. Well, it turns out that's exactly what happened. But the NOAA model did not correct itself for about 2 months. So if we're doing that again, a little caution is needed here. We may see this NOAA model back off on some of this intensification. I think what should happen in this year is that La Nina will weaken into the spring gradually and slowly. We may not even completely lose it, but it should be fairly weak when we get to June. And then in September and October, I think it'll intensify again. Yes, we will still be influenced by La Nina here in North America, but it may not be that dramatic. There are other reasons for dryness to be around in the summer. We'll have to talk about that on another day.
Indeed, we will. Just a quick definition. Solar minimum, which you mentioned, is the period in the sunspot cycle when solar activity is lowest and sunspots are least abundant. In 2009, we had the last, I think, solar minimum. So it's kind of an 11-year cycle or something along those lines. Now, you mentioned La Nina. We've talked a lot about that. Quickly, that had a big impact on the South American growing regions. Things have gotten better there. Just a short word.
Yeah, absolutely. We have begun to turn the corner. Argentina is seeing more routinely occurring rainfall. Traditionally, La Nina is more punishing to Argentina in the early crops that they have there, usually from October into December. It's pretty classic for them to have their biggest dryness issue. And in the case of Brazil, of course, La Nina delays the onset of their annual rains, but usually once they get going, they go just fine. And that's where we are right now.
Hey, thank you, Drew. I appreciate it.
Have a good day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. He joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. Came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to us on demand at WILLAG.org. Just click and play from the website. Also, you'll find there today a way to register for tomorrow's conservation cropping seminar. Should be a good one. I'll be hosting that in the morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. on Thursday, and you can sign up for free today. Tomorrow, we'll take up conservation cropping as it relates to beef cattle production, pasture, and livestock rotational grazing. So be sure, if you're in that area, to sign up right now. You can do that by looking for it on our website at willag.org.